Hey everybody, this is John Maroon, President of Maroon PR. Thank you for once again tuning into Spin is a Four-Letter Word, the Maroon PR podcast. This year, we are calling our podcast The Brew, because you'll be hearing from all of our teammates about how they do their jobs, how they brew success for our clients. So hopefully you'll get some great takeaways that you can apply to your business. We appreciate you listening. And please give us a follow at Maroon PR and let us know what you think, if there's any topics that you want to hear about. Thanks, and here's The Brew.
Welcome back to a brand new episode of The Brew. I'm your host, Rocco DeSangro, and joining me on this new episode, when we're talking about design, is our graphic designer of over 6 years here at Maroon PR. That is Sarah Hill, and our vice president of social strategy and content provides creative direction. That is Amanda Sarver. We have a great episode in store for you here today.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, Rocco. It's Amanda. Happy to have Sarah here joining the podcast, as she is our in-house graphic designer, as you mentioned, and a crucial key to our creative team. We're structured with Sarah, who's got this great experience as our graphic designer. We've got Emma, who is our producer on the podcast, sitting here with us as well, who's our videographer and editor extraordinaire. And, you know, like Rocco said, I try to provide creative direction and help manage the many amounts of to-dos and priorities that get thrown onto our creative team, and really look to capitalize on their individual skills and experience and do what we can for our clients to really come out with some cool things. Yeah, Sarah, why don't you kind of let us know who you are and talk about your approach?
First time ever doing a podcast episode. I love to live behind my computer. I'm a behind the scenes girl. But yes, I have been with Maroon for over six years now. Yes.
Wow.
And this was my first design job right out of college. I have grown with the company, absolutely, and seen so many different wonderful clients come through, and just, we tackle so many different types of creative and visual design here. You know, I do logos for clients and brand kits, and also social media graphics at the same time, print collateral, large scale murals. We're kind of doing everything here.
Yeah.
No, we really are. You hit the nail on the head there, Sarah. It's like so much that goes into it. And while we talk about this first real topic, the challenges, just prioritizing it, you know, and the needs of our clients as well. I do want to kind of preface that by asking each person, Amanda and Sarah, what you define design as, because I feel like each person kind of has their own definition of what design actually is and what goes into it. So if you can touch on that while going into what is so challenging about it and how you kind of prioritize it and the needs of the clients, because we have a lot of clients here at Maroon PR, and a lot of roles you kind of have to jump in when you're looking to specific design projects, I'm sure.
Absolutely. Sarah, you want to talk about your approach?
And yeah, absolutely. Design is so, it's hard to define, because also when you say design, you could be talking about a million different things, but in a Maroon PR sense and content creation, it's visual communication is the most simple way I can put it, because while of course most, if not all, design work that we do for clients contains visual copy included, it's the main communication that you are sharing is coming across in what's not written down, you know, like it's in the colors, it's in the shapes, patterns. It's different depending on where you're seeing whatever we've created. If you're seeing it as an ad, or if you're seeing it as just something in your feed on social media, there's just so many things that go into it that you can communicate without any words whatsoever. And I just think that's so beautiful. It's so special. And it's also very strange communication. Everybody does it differently. And so that's not just words. That's how your eyes take in a design and the layout of something. Something that somebody sees as very simple and concise and lovely, maybe a minimalist design, might be really boring to another person who sees it. That actually kind of goes into my personal design philosophy, which is that empathy is a graphic designer's greatest tool, because each designer has their own personal preferences. I have things that I like to do, but having and continuing to develop as I grow as a creative person, empathy to understand what's going to appeal to somebody, an audience that's completely different from me, and how that's going to serve our clients the best and communicate who they are the best.
Yeah. And I think, Sarah, that's a great point. I think you are by nature an empathetic person, and that comes across in your work too, because I think you are so uniquely situated to really take in each client and hear from them what their vision is and what they like to see, you know, getting inspiration from them and then taking that and turning it into something that is really useful and something that can inspire their audiences, whether that's inspire them visually or inspire them to engage. You know, you do such a great job. You're a chameleon at figuring out. We have so many unique clients. You know, we work in the sports and hospitality, nonprofits, healthcare buckets for the most part, but you've had in your career here to touch on to so many different industries and markets and needs of clients. And I know that, that's the challenge in and of itself. It helps keep the work interesting, but I do think you do such a good job of bringing life to their ideas or things that they're not even sure how to communicate. And really seeing them, you know, what their core values are and bringing that to life in your art. And that's one of the reasons why we're so lucky to have you here, for sure.
That is so lovely. Thank you, Amanda.
Absolutely. You know, just talking about that and like the challenges and strategies there, like I know that we use Basecamp as kind of our project management tool. And
love Basecamp so much.
And have our to-dos in there. And, you know, I try to help with talking to the rest of our team to help prioritize when we've got a lot of things going on. But do you want to talk about just kind of the challenges of the different sizes even that you're dealing with, the different mediums that you're trying to get across, and, you know, the challenge of having so many different types of clients when you're really tasked with getting all that creativity out there?
Yeah, that's a challenge that hasn't stopped, and it's going to continue to evolve. Well, the biggest challenge there as far as creating responsive design for your clients. We have so many places that we consume media and content nowadays. You know, you're on your phone, you might be on your computer, there's ads on your TV, there's, you know, print ads are still a thing, I'd like to say. Print is not dead.
We still do plenty of those.
And I love to see a print ad, but it's constantly changing. There's new social platforms all the time. You have our major big ones that we're always designing for, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, sometimes LinkedIn. It's just being able to take a cohesive design that you've created for one medium and then putting it somewhere else in a place that may need to be completely resized. Like you create a gorgeous square-shaped design for social media, but then you need to translate that into an Instagram reel, particularly. That's actually, I bring that up because that has been changing a lot. You have your standard dimensions that you design within, but once you post that on the platform, it appears in somebody's feed. It actually, some of the design may get cut off because of all the other elements that are present on that social platform. It's really a team effort to stay up to date with all of those changes. Mm-hmm. Amanda is great at seeing that stuff because myself and our videographer, Emma, our heads are always in our projects, and, you know, we try to keep up with. Personally, we use our social media and we can see when things change, but we might not always be aware. And then Amanda's always on top of that and will let us know, hey, or if we share something that is a bit cut off on one platform, that's just take it as a learning experience. And for next time, you study that and apply it to the next project that you need to post there. And I'll create these visual guide templates that I share with our videographer Emma as well. It's sort of just an overlay that I'll have inside of a file that I'm working in. So as I'm putting the design together, I have to go back and check because those guides will help me make sure that all the important information and design elements are not going to get cut off for the viewer. It's constantly evolving, which is beautiful. It's great because we're always trying to improve things and make them better and more intuitive. Alas, it just, you know, it's just keeping up with it.
Yeah.
It keeps things interesting.
No, absolutely. And you talk about working with the different clients and the different projects that you've had to work on over the years. What does that quickly, just like the line of communication kind of look like, and how detailed could be too detailed? Because, you know, someone might be listening and might not realize it. Client goes to an account director, account coordinator. They put it in Basecamp. They go to you. You then put together an initial first draft, send it back to the coordinator who then sends it back. So it's like a 1-3-step process. It kind of seems like, but yes. When you're working on a project and you see initially what it is, because it's coming in as text right off the bat, like how detailed is too detailed at the end of the day? Or do you want it to be as detailed as possible?
Oh goodness. There's no right answer there,
right.
But I usually say I like as much detail as possible, as much information, particularly from the client. And then that does come through our team. It kind of gets filtered through and then adapted to our language, how we discuss creative things and make that project happen for the client. But I love details. All of any words can help me, honestly, because translating that what a client, also understanding what a client thinks that they're saying, what they're trying to tell you they want, but since they aren't a creative person necessarily, they're not a designer, hearing that and maybe being able to understand how to show them what they think they mean.
Right.
Yeah. If that makes sense.
Yeah. I think like getting a lot of detail about what the client wants and what their end goal is really helpful. And like Sarah's saying, if there's a message that they're trying to get across, giving a lot of detail. But I think from the creativity and the design perspective, Sarah can take that and run with it. Right.
Oh, yeah. Right.
They may have concepts of here's an idea we want to get across. We have no idea what the right medium is for that or what that might look like. And Sarah and Emma and our team can look and say like, okay, this could be a great series of animations. This could be a great reel. This could be, you know, and kind of taking that and adapting what their end goal is and working backward to say like, here's what this can look like. And here's where our creativity can really come in to bring even a small vision to life and really give it legs.
I've seen that happen multiple times too, where it's been like the client doesn't even know what they want until you guys bring it to the table. And it's like, yeah, this is what we made. And they're like, oh wow, this is like better than we would have hoped for it to be at first.
It can also go in the opposite direction too. You never know. Like I have tried to not set my expectations too specifically because I mean, it's happened before. I think I've nailed it. I think that I understood exactly what they were asking for. And turns out they were thinking about something totally different. Just being adaptable and flexible and being able to listen in that way. And also not taking those things personally. It's all about communicating and being open with it and viewing all of that process as constructive and ultimately leading to creating something that is perfect for what they were looking for.
Yeah. And I think Sarah just touched on like adaptability. And I think, we try to cultivate a team mindset of experimentation and adaptability. And when you have the clients that we have and we have the different buckets that we live in, we're adapting all the time, whether it's adapting to trends or adapting to the specific niche or whatever that is. And that's one of the great challenges is adapting to each project and to each client and really bringing to life what their end goal is.
Yeah, no, it makes sense because like you're at the end of the day, you're trying to reach that kind of wide range of audiences. You're working with different people. You got, casinos, you got sports clients. You talk about working out of the three buckets when you go with nonprofit, hospitality and sports. So it's like all of that and then some. So it's, you have to be as creative as humanly possible. And you do a really good job of that, Sarah, because it definitely helps not only clients, but the coordinators and the directors that you work with too, because, it taps into their creative mindsets too.
Right. And Rocco, you touched on like the audience, right? That's such an important point is who is viewing this and what does the client want them to feel or engage with, or what's the action they want them to take after seeing this or experiencing this, and really, needing to consider different audiences and so many different buckets and things that we touch on. So I think Sarah, that goes back to the empathy piece of Sarah being able to kind of create for a wide array of audiences.
Yeah, no doubt. Absolutely. And Sarah, I know you said the article in there in our initial outline that you wanted to talk about, just the cultural impact that some of these design trends that they have, you see them on the regular. I'm not as tapped into design as I should be, but I want to be.
I feel the same way, to be honest, at times. Yeah. And it's,
How have you seen that over the years, kind of those design trends change for the better and help along the lines when you're talking about just design overall?
I mean, trends, that's the thing about it. You never know what's going to happen, what's going to come next. We can predict where they're going to go, but just in a couple of years, it all changes so quickly. It kind of follows alongside current events, and pop culture especially has so much influence in design, and you really just never know what's going to come next. We can talk about AI as a huge factor in the evolution of design, and it has a lot of designers and artists all over the place a little bit nervous. People have a lot of opinions about it, and working on integrating that into Maroon PR and how we can best use it intentionally and responsibly is a huge thing.
Absolutely. We've talked about this prior on the podcast, but just embracing AI as a partner in all of our processes, but in the creative process too. And it's less of a threat to traditional design roles. The immediate threat would be people who know how to leverage it effectively and utilize it to help them be more efficient. And I think when we're talking about experimentation and adaptability, we want to give Sarah and our creative team room to really explore that and see how it can be a tool to help, whether that's to help brainstorm, whether that's, whatever that may look like. giving room to say, hey, how can we utilize this tool to better our process to help you with your day-to-day and really stay ahead on that trend and make sure that we're not falling behind so that we're always keeping the human element, but we're using all of the tools at our disposal, which includes the AI. You know, in our end of year meeting, we talked about utilizing AI and we talked a lot about how to utilize that and the ethics of that. Also, we talked about the environmental impact, and I'm a big proponent of transparency. I think that's going to be so important moving forward with with AI is always, if it's something that you're not able to produce yourself, then you should be disclosing that it was AI assisted. And I think, 100%. You know, making sure that AI solutions are enhancing rather than diminishing what we do from the human experience. And Sarah, if you want to talk about just kind of how you're utilizing it, I'd love to hear from you about how we spot it in creative fun. And visual as well.
And also I do want to say, I feel that the role of a graphic designer in the capacity that we use that with Maroon, our work is at the intersection of commerce and culture, how they come together. And as our society and our tools evolve, design is always going to be affected by that. It has been in the whole history of the world since before electricity was a thing. We had cave drawings, you know, like it's something that humans have always been creating art. Art is human in every possible way. It's just, it's beautiful. It's a, why do we do this? I don't know. But it's wonderful.
When you're talking about that human element, when you were telling me about the Coachella performance and the keeping art human. So I'd love to hear about that too. Yeah. When you're talking about how to integrate.
First, I do want to go back to spotting an AI generated image, because I think in most social media platforms, it is required that there will be a small blurb or a tiny line of text that says AI was used in this, or especially some older generations who are not necessarily as literate in internet things. I saw an ad the other day that was absolutely, I knew it was AI the second I saw it, but it was an image that my aunt on Facebook reshared and didn't really notice that the baby in that photo had like two extra fingers, you know? So when you're trying to tell if, usually I think our brains will pick up on the fact that something about this image is just a little bit, it's a little too smooth.
Yes.
There's, and 1,000%. Then when just look a little bit closer and then you may see certain details are a bit off. Some of them are very obvious and hilarious, actually. That's a fun rabbit hole to go down on the internet.
The ones I see like on Reels where it's like a fisherman and there's like this sea monster that's like up, you know, that they caught.
Yeah.
It's like clearly not like a real creature.
No.
Or just like anything that exists. But the people in the comments have to say like, is this AI? And the fact that you have to say it is just like, whoa, it does look so real, but...
In
clearly.
Itself, yeah, that's actually a really great point that I also want to touch on. It's created this another layer of suspicion that we all have to wonder, is this AI? Is it not? It's making us question things that actually aren't AI, but people are coming in and saying, for sure it is. And that actually leads me into something recently at Coachella. This Brazilian DJ called Alok, he dedicated his entire set to sort of the theme was keep art human, and that's how he finished the entire set. So he's a DJ, he's up there with all his tools and things and fist pumping and such. And he has several rows of dancers in front of him performing during his set, and they all have these metallic silver gloves on and then in all black, and they're doing all these really fantastic, cool, just hand movements, and they're all very in sync with each other. And people on the internet, and he shared a teaser of the performance too, before he even did the whole thing, people understood what it was about. People thought that those dancers were AI.
Wow.
And he had to come out and say, no, this is, and you know, I'll get into that during the performance, but keep art human is what he wanted to say with his performance. And he intentionally had the dancers kind of doing these mechanical movements. The performance, he wanted it to be about living art, and the mechanical movements of those dancers kind of was a commentary on how people are afraid that AI is trying to undermine the human element of art. And I felt that it was really powerful when he said to create art, it needs to have soul, which is something that a computer can't have. That is purely a human thing. So using it to enhance the creation of art as a tool to, we actually just used it for this beautiful design that we created for Maryland Food Bank for Maryland Day. We wanted to incorporate vegetables and the Maryland flag. So and it needed to happen quickly. And AI helped us make a Maryland flag that looked like it was shot professionally in a studio, but a computer put it together. And it's zucchini and tomatoes and all kinds of other organic elements that are in the shape of a Maryland flag. So I took that image and then I created a design based off of that. And so in that sense, a human made the final piece, but the computer, the AI, like really helped out the process.
Helped to conceptualize, yeah.
Exactly, mm-hmm. Yes. So in that sense, I think that's a good example of responsible use of yeah. that. And for the Howard County Huskies, they're a little ice hockey team. For Happy Holidays, we wanted a graphic of some snowmen playing ice hockey. And you can search stock imagery all you want, but if it doesn't already exist, AI can help you make that a reality without awesome. That lift being as heavy as it would normally be.
I think one of the biggest compliments, you know, back to the key part human performance is to for someone to say like that's AI and it's not.
I know.
Like, that was like incredible to hear. And for the performer, it's gotta be like I did my job basically. Like yeah. I did my job. I got what we had out there and like the creativity factor. I'm pumped to go watch that performance and just kind of take it all in because that's something special. And you do need the human element going forward. But Sarah, as we go into, I don't know, 2025's nearly midway over, which is crazy. We're 4 months in. 2025, 26, like as we go forward, what are some of these like trends that you expect to see? Like, do you have any predictions like off the top of your head right now? Sorry to put you on the spot.
Oh no, I mean, I've been noticing a lot of, we're trending towards a lot more mixed media, and nostalgia has always been a huge thing culturally. We're always looking back and trying to bring things that we've done in the past into the present and evolve them. I mean, there's been a lot of early 2000s nostalgia present in design, but I think that's been going on for a couple of years and we're starting to move a little bit away from that. But yes, mixed media collage elements. I've been doing a lot of that for Maroon PR's internal content for our Women's History Month. I was using that. I think people are getting a little bit sick of their phones, and there's a bit of a everybody that I talk to about this, people kind of are feeling stuck and sort of tethered to the digital world, and I think people want to feel a little bit closer to each other again. I think people miss having paper in their hands, and funny enough, it's not happening in that way, but it's translating to seeing graphics that incorporate elements that realistically it looks like somebody hand put together and glued together, paper mache, little collage. And another trend that it's just continuing to grow and evolve. It's beautiful. And it means that Emma and I have been collaborating a lot on animations, motion graphics. Video continues to be king, particularly on social media. Anything that's moving is going to pull somebody's eye right away. So it's always been important to have a lot of different skill sets, but motion graphics and making things move in a creative way.
Yeah, and I think you and Emma do a great job of complimenting each other on that and kind of looking at the big picture together, and then Sarah doing the design piece and Emma doing animation or however it manifests itself. But that's one of the great ways I see in our collaboration that works really well and puts out a great product.
I'm glad you brought up the people are so can be feel so attached to their phones right now. It was really cool to see at the Masters golf tournament, like nobody had their phones because they're not allowed to have their phones, and just seeing the shot, it was usually you see people on their phones just holding it up because people are attached. They want to take the video or you know, be on their phone scrolling through this, that, and the other thing, but they're not staying present at times. And it's not a bad thing to be on your phone or have your phone and use it to be on social media or do whatever you need to do. But it's if you're too attached or addicted, then that might become a problem for you. And it's
holding you back from the moment that you're in. And you're at the Masters tournament or you're at a concert and you're viewing it through your camera on your phone. And I think that we've been talking about it long enough that it's reached everybody. And yes.
Absolutely. No, I think this was a fantastic episode. Amanda, Sarah, thank you so much for your time. I think this is incredible and super insightful. And that's exactly what we want to do with The Brew, is just be insightful, have these conversations, and just grow the audience as well. So that's going to wrap it up for a brand new episode of The Brew. For Sarah Hill and Amanda Sarver, I'm Rocco DeSangro. We'll see you next time.
Hey, it's John Maroon again. Thank you for listening to Spin is a Four-Letter Word. And just a reminder, if you can, follow us on all the major social media platforms at Maroon PR. If you have an idea or suggestion, let us know what you think, and we'll see you soon.